I'm Rowan Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Afternoon Show. We are live, but only for a short time today. We've got a remixed schedule this afternoon because we've got all kinds of special programming. So the Afternoon Show is only going to last until 4:30 today. And then at 4:30, we'll hear the latest episode of Bound by Books that you usually hear at 7 p.m. And at 5 p.m., we're going to hear Clubhouse Radio, which you usually hear at 6 p.m. Then at 6 p.m., we go live to Art Oh My in Ghent. Performances from Raven Chacon, Kite, Laura Ortman, Warren Realrider, Robbie Wing, and Nathan Young. It's the Hudson Valley Intertribal Noise Symposium and Book Release, organized by Nathan Young from a book printed by Lanesville Press. We will tune into the show at Art Oh My at 6 to 8 p.m. tonight. Then at 8 p.m. tonight, we go live to the Fridman Gallery in New York City, where Michael Schumacher performs. So stay tuned all evening to varied live and local programming, special broadcasts from elsewhere, and more. And we're hoping that you support us on our final day of our pledge drive with a donation at wgxc.org/donate for these things that we're about to air. Youth radio, talking about what books they've been reading and what stories they want to tell and what songs they want to play. And then live events from Art Oh My and from the Fridman Gallery in New York City. So all sorts of things on your lively local radio station. All worth a donation at wgxc.org/donate. Please do your part. That's right. Assist us in transmission at wgxc.org/donate during the WGXC Summer Pledge Drive. Give what you can. And we thank you for your help and support for keeping Creative Community Radio solar-powered in the Upper Hudson Valley. The local news is next. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the WGXC Afternoon Show.
Hi, I'm Julia.
And I'm Henning.
And we're from Roundtop. And you're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM in Acra, Hudson, and Catskill.
There are so many things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, including on Saturday, August 19th, from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's time for the Deep in the Valley 2023 Festival. Raven Sings the Blues presents a second year of psych jam experimental country and folk bands performing, this year with Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, The Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders performing. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook on Saturday, August 19th, the Deep in the Valley Festival. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David White of Greenville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News.
Joshua Solomon reports for the Times Union that with few businesses or communities willing to build new, much-needed affordable housing, Governor Kathy Hochul wants to turn the former downstate correctional facility in Fishkill in Dutchess County into a residential development. Developers could get up to $8 million in state grants to turn the 80-acre site from a maximum security facility with space for 1,200 inmates into a housing development at least 20% affordable housing units. The site is near a retail distribution center for Gap Incorporated, a minor league baseball stadium, and a semiconductor business. Fishkill is 4 miles north of Beacon and 14 miles south of Poughkeepsie, where there are Metro North Railroad stops. New York began taking bids from developers on July 20th. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports that after a Wall Street Journal story said hundreds of communities across the country, including Wappingers Falls and Dutchess County, have lead telecommunications cables leaching into the ground, Congressperson Pat Ryan and Governor Kathy Hochul are upset. Both are demanding telecommunications companies remove lead cables from around the country. Ryan, who represents the 18th Congressional District, has written the CEOs of Verizon, AT&T, and U.S. Telecom, requesting they remove the toxic lead cables. In Wappingers Falls, one lead cable runs along the perimeter of a children's playground and basketball court. The Environmental Protection Agency recommends that children avoid soil containing more than 400 parts of lead per million, but samples taken on the local playground tested at 850 parts per million. Hochul has ordered an investigation into the issue and closed the Wappinger Falls Park while the soil there goes under further testing. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that many Republicans in the state legislature want to ban smoking cannabis in public places in New York after 2 years of legislation with few stores open for sales. State Senator George Borrello said, and I quote, "State residents, including children, are now regularly assailed with the pungent odor of marijuana on public sidewalks, in parking lots, and other public spaces. Many New Yorkers don't want to be subjected to it. Many New Yorkers don't want to be exposed to either the effects of marijuana smoke or its smell and don't want their children to be subjected to it," end quote. State cannabis regulators announced a process this week to sell cannabis at large events and festivals as they get continued criticism for the slow rollout of stores. Republicans want to fine folks smoking cannabis in public up to $125. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I can't help but believe that this is just another episode in a long-standing campaign of intimidation and a harassment of the Supreme Court and its members.
Republican Texas Senator John Cornyn opposes Democrats pushing for a more stringent ethics code for Supreme Court justices. It's become a hot-button issue following revelations of travel by Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito and Justice Sonia Sotomayor's book sales. The Senate Judiciary Committee advanced the bill along party lines. Senate Judiciary Chair Dick Durbin said it's a first step to restore confidence in the court.
Historians and legal scholars from across the political spectrum agree that legislation imposing a code of conduct on the Supreme Court is both necessary and well within Congress's congressional authority.
The measure now heads to the Senate floor. Democratic presidential hopeful Robert F. Kennedy Jr. spoke before Congress Thursday and denied making racist or anti-Semitic comments, despite a video in which he claimed the COVID-19 virus was targeted to attack Caucasians and blacks disproportionately, while Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese individuals were more immune.
In my entire life, I have never uttered a phrase that was either racist or anti-Semitic.
President Joe Biden used video clips of Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who compared him to Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon B. Johnson, to promote his campaign online. Biden, who was in Philadelphia Thursday to promote clean energy jobs, cracked a joke about Greene.
Said Biden is doing things like Roosevelt and it goes on the line as if in creating these jobs. And he thinks that, I never had an endorsement from him before.
As former President Donald Trump's legal woes deepen, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has reportedly promised to expunge former President Donald Trump's impeachments in exchange for not endorsing his campaign, according to Politico. Sources told the publication a vote could come before the August recess. The speaker has reportedly denied making such a promise. Finally, education officials in Florida have approved new standards to teach students about African American history. Other lessons will touch on acts of violence perpetrated against and by African Americans. Florida Commissioner of Education Manny Diaz pushed back against claims the new standards censor history.
And if anyone takes the time to actually look at the standards, you can see that everything is covered from elementary school, where we start talking about those who have been prominent African Americans, and as age appropriate, we go into some of the tougher subjects.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our Atros indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While former President Donald Trump awaits a likely indictment for his role in the attempt to overturn the 2020 election, we're in Michigan, where two related cases involving alleged fake electors and voting machine tampering are moving forward. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel charged 16 fake electors, who Nessel said in a statement were part of a, quote, organized effort to circumvent the lawfully cast ballots of millions of Michigan voters in a presidential election. The alleged participants are charged with one or more counts of conspiracy to commit forgery, election law forgery, and other felonies. The Michigan Advance reports that those charged include the co-chair of the Michigan GOP, the mayor of Wyoming, Michigan, a co-founder of the Michigan Conservative Coalition, and several county and state candidates and committee members. The false documents were allegedly signed in the basement of the Michigan GOP headquarters before being submitted to the U.S. Senate and National Archives as genuine. Bridge Michigan reports that on July 12th, an Oakland County judge ruled that a special prosecutor may move forward with a voting machine tampering case involving a 2022 candidate for Michigan Attorney General, Matt DiPerno, a former state representative, and others. The suspects allegedly took Dominion ballot tabulating machines to a hotel room to find evidence of voter fraud. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 21st. Local early morning temperatures range from 61 degrees in Tannersville to 71 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 72 degrees. Pollen levels for today have cratered. Sensors are showing minimal levels today, and this weekend should only make it into low territory. Trees and ragweed are done for now, just grasses will be popping up. Air quality will be good today. Smoke should be not present at ground levels. This morning, a traditional wall of rain passes from west to east. Some people may be woken up by a bang of thunder. Midday will have a lull in precipitation, and some people could even see spots of blue sky, but don't be swayed. After a brief high temperature of 80 degrees at 3 p.m., then both the temperature and rain drop, looking heaviest around 6 p.m. Some places could see thunder, damaging winds, and hail. Rain should end for all by midnight, but around 10 p.m. it should be comfortable enough for most to switch from air conditioning to cool outside air. It will dip to 60 degrees overnight. Then, Saturday will be, well, pretty darn nice. Most of the day will be very comfortable with partly cloudy skies and a high of 82 at 6 p.m. Then, get this, 58 comfortable sleeping degrees overnight takes us into a sunnier and warmer Sunday with a high of 84. Monday, temperatures still looking up, but not the dew points. A high of 86 is possible, along with afternoon rain. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:06 a.m., high tide at 5:56 a.m., low tide at 12:47 p.m., then high tide once again at 6:48 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:34 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have dropped to 5%. A weak Hadouken hit yesterday, and though it didn't do much, but if it weakened our magnetosphere enough, today's coronal mass ejection may do some damage. Check out the Better Weather Telegram channel or NOAA.gov for more info. Plasma winds will be slow at 399 kilometers per second with an average density of 8 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are low chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 131. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who remind you, yeah, everything is getting real hot, but you know what's cool? Your neighbors and the chorus of honesty coming out of your speaker. That means all the cool kids like to chill at WGXE.org. Lots of community stuff to find there, and don't forget that donate button. Sustaining supporters are just the coolest.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking today with Dan Rochelle, who is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And one of the key environmental bills that were passed during the recent state legislative session was the Birds and Bees Protection Act, trying to protect them from pesticides. And it's, at some point, hopefully, Governor Hochul will be signing that bill. But we thought we'd bring Dan on, maybe just give us a little explanation of why is the Birds and Bees Protection Act so important?
Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. And yeah, this is just an incredibly important bill. It's a nationally important bill. Essentially, in a nutshell, what it does is it prohibits harmful and unnecessary uses of a class of pesticides known as the neonicotinoids, or neonics for short. And these pesticides are probably most famous for driving mass losses of bees and other pollinators. And we've already seen, you know, food production because of a lack or food production losses because of a lack of those pollinators. But the more that we've learned about these pesticides in the last several years shows that they're essentially the most destructive class of pesticides we've seen since DDT. They're linked to mass losses of birds, mass losses of fish, and the collapse of aquatic ecosystems. They're linked with birth defects in white-tailed deer. And increasingly, we're seeing these pesticides show up in New York water supplies and in the bodies of New Yorkers themselves, in particular pregnant women. And that is raising all sorts of concerns about their impacts on New Yorkers' health because they are neurotoxic. And we do have studies linking them to problems in people, such as birth defects, higher rates of birth defects of the heart and brain, autism-like symptoms, and, you know, impaired cognition for folks who are prenatally exposed. So these are, you know, harmful across the board. And again, this is a bill that would eliminate just those uses of the pesticides that are unnecessary. And that's about 80 to 90% of the neonics going into New York's environment every year. So we think it's a really important bill and a really common sense one.
Now, there's been a lot of media coverage in recent years about the sudden loss of bees, including at times entire beehives. Does this bill, you know, particularly solve that problem, or is it just part of the solution? And how well are the bees doing? Do we still have time to sort of allow them to recover?
Well, it depends which bees you're talking about. So These pesticides are definitely linked with sort of the mass loss of bees we saw in the mid-2000s. So up until about 2006, beekeepers in New York and across the country would lose about 10 to 15% of their hives a year. And then all of a sudden, that jumped to 30, 40, 50% a year, virtually overnight. And while there are a lot of problems impacting bees, you know, neonics are just one of them. We have climate change, parasites, pathogens, loss of habitat. There's no other factor that maps with that sudden loss in honeybees other than the sudden uptick in use of these pesticides, particularly as coatings on crop seeds. So there's a really strong connection between these pesticides and bee losses. And the thing about them is they're neurotoxic and they weaken bees. So all of these other problems that bees are facing, these pesticides only make those problems worse. And while honeybees are bred and replaced every year, right, they're essentially livestock. So when a beekeeper loses 40% of their colonies, you know, they'll get more hives. They'll either make them themselves or they'll purchase new queens and split hives. But the same is not happening with our native bees and other pollinators. And there's over 400 species in New York. They're absolutely critical to New York's ecosystems. About 80% of the plants on the face of the earth, you know, require bees to reproduce. So if you see losses of bees, you start to see the collapse of ecosystems. But what we also see is that these native pollinators are really good crop pollinators too. So we see apples, blueberries, and cherries now pollinator limited across the U.S., with Harvard estimating, you know, global production of fruit and vegetables down about 3 to 5%. And again, a big part of why we have fewer pollinators now and fewer crop pollination is because of the use of these pesticides and the wasteful use.
Now, I've seen some reports that there appears to be some pushback from some people in the agriculture industry. I assume probably the chemical manufacturers always, of course, want to protect their product. What are their arguments at this point to justify, you know, or urging Governor Hochul to, you know, not sign the bill?
I think there's some misunderstanding about the bill and what has happened other places. So it's important to note that this bill is based on a report by Cornell University that looked at over 1,100 peer-reviewed papers on the use of neonics, and importantly did a cost-benefit analysis, right? Neonics versus their alternatives. Because with pesticides, you know, it's not just a question of, you know, are they bad and should we get rid of them? But if we get rid of them, what is going to replace them? And how is that going to impact farmers? And what the Cornell report found is that the largest use of these pesticides, the coatings on corn and soybean seeds, and to explain that, they literally paint these pesticides on the outside of seeds, and those plants, the way they work, they sort of get into the tissues of plants. So they're intended, as that plant is growing, to get into the plant and make every part of the plant itself toxic, the leaves, the roots, the pollen, the nectar, everything. So these are used on well over 1 million acres of New York land. And what the Cornell report found is they provide no overall economic impacts, benefits to farmers. So essentially, the bill just targets those uses. It doesn't target any other agricultural uses, and it targets non-agricultural uses, so lawn and garden uses. And I think there are some folks that think that the bill is broader than that, that it affects fruit and vegetable uses. It doesn't. It doesn't even affect other uses on corn and soybean seeds. On corn and soybean plants. So a farmer, as long as they're using a non-neonic treated seed, could use other pesticides in the season or even use neonics. So it's a very limited bill, and it addresses just these uses that are shown not to provide economic benefits. And what we've seen in Europe, where they have essentially banned these on seeds for the last 10 years, and in Canada, just over the border in Quebec and Ontario, where they essentially have not used these pesticides on corn and soybean seeds for the last 5 years, it hasn't affected crop yields. Farmers are still growing corn and soybean. So again, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about how narrow the bill is and the experience other places that have already moved on beyond these pesticides and, you know, just over the border from New York.
So we have a little bit less than 2 minutes. I'm going to give you, one big ending question. Has the State Department of Environmental Conservation weighed in? Do we have any sense where Governor Hochul is leaning at this point? If people want to express their opinion, how best can they do that to the governor? And if people want more information, your website.
Yeah, so that's a big question. I haven't seen anything out in terms of, published responses from DEC, the State Environmental Agency. Although one thing to note here, right now, DEC doesn't exercise any jurisdiction, pesticide jurisdiction, over these pesticide-treated seeds. Normally, it's DEC that regulates pesticides, but because of federal and state loopholes, there's essentially nobody directly regulating these treated seeds as pesticides, again, even though they cover 1 million acres. We're not sure where the governor is on the bill just yet, although we're certainly hoping that she will sign it. We know that the governor is a champion of pollinators. She signed a pollinator proclamation in April, and we know the governor knows how important pollinators are to New York's agricultural economy and ecosystems. So if folks want to let the governor know what they think about the bill and the importance of this issue, certainly they can reach out to her, and her contact information is online. And, the more information, the more that the governor hears from folks, the better. And I'm at nrdc.org.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acre is the home of the Art Park with 13 installations in the Study Center, WGXC Acre Studio, the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
To shame, he's not a fag. The only girl I ever loved was Andrew and Drag. There is no hope of love for me, from here on I go stag. The only girl I ever loved is Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Yeah. I don't know why I even went, it's really not my bag. Just thought it might be funny to see Andrew and Drag. The moment he walked on the stage, my tail began to wag. Wag like a little winter dog for Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Yeah. I've always been a ladies' man and I don't have to brag. But I've become a mama's boy for Andrew and Drag. I've signed away my trust fund, I would even sell the jag. If I could spend my misspent youth with Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag. Yeah. So stick him in a dress and he's the only boy I shag. The only boy I had anything is Andrew and Drag. I'll never see that girl again, he did it as a gag. I'll pine away forevermore for Andrew and Drag.
on Saturday, July 22nd. Turn out or tune in to Wave Farm for a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl